This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
The secret to being an entrepreneur is not the idea. Everybody has ideas. The problem is, how do you go and then you start implementing and you start working on it on the daily routine? Because at the beginning, you can't devote yourself full time for that. So you need to find room for it. And then you need consistency and you need perseverance and you need just to grind through it. And this is when 99% of those ideas fall. It's not about being good or bad, or not even about competition. It's about doing the never-ending slow process, especially at the beginning.
Welcome to the Parent Footprint Podcast with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan, your host, and let me tell you about our mission at Parent Footprint. It is to make the world a more loving and compassionate place, one parent and one child at a time. We believe the key to raising happy, healthy, and engaged kids is for us parents to seek the same in our own lives, happiness, health, and engagement. We firmly believe that awareness is the foundation for your vision of successful parenting, and with increased awareness and intention, we can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint on our children. Today's show is Family Finance with our guest, Benny Natchman. Benny is a father of two boys, a serial entrepreneur with a proven track record in building a global bank with over $7 billion in annual revenue. He recently founded Jazby, which we'll be talking about today, the mobile wallet for the family with a mission of helping parents teach kids about money. Now, Benny, I was going to say a lot more about you, but I want you to tell everyone about you. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Dan. Thank you for having me, and thank you for saying kind words about me. That's always refreshing and surprising at the same time.
There's a lot to say here, Benny. So let's start with your story. What was your road to becoming an entrepreneur and one in finance and all that you have accomplished?
Okay. There's a quote that I love. I once read an interview. I think I'm going to say the name wrong probably, but the former president of France, and I think his name is pronounced François Hollande. And I once saw an interview, and he said that his career was one never-ending series of mistakes. And, you know, so I don't know. I'm not sure that I exactly planned it. I was born and raised in Israel. You can probably still hear it from my accent. I'm here for about 15 years, something like that, followed my wife. I'm an attorney by profession. I always tell people, don't hold it against me. I haven't practiced in many years. Mm-hmm. But I think in my heart, and this is probably since childhood, I'm always like an entrepreneur. I want to build things. I want to start things. I want to, you know, I want to build companies, businesses, even before probably that I could maybe articulate it exactly that way. So Jazby is my third company. I had my first real business was when I was in law school, so still a kid. And a few friends and myself, we started a company that was aimed at helping students prepare for GMAT. And, you know, I finished law school. I went into practice, which at the time I was debating, do I really want to do? And I, you know, in retrospect, I think it was one of the best choices that I've made, because those few years that I've practiced told me and taught me a lot about life, business, how to do business. And part of my practice was around the office that I worked for was around banking, more ancillary. So I did some, credit card processing agreements and anti-fraud software. It was always around high-tech, and a little bit of this was around fintech, although in the time it wasn't really even called fintech. And then I joined, there's a fine line, I think, between a commercial attorney and a business development person. Mm-hmm. So at early 2000, I joined another small company or medium-sized company that was a payment service provider as a business development person. We sold that company in 2006. And at that point, I'm in an interesting point of my life. So I'm already here in the U.S. and live in the Silicon Valley. We just talked about a few minutes before we started. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Santa Clara for a while. And, my wife, who is the real brains in the family, is a computer engineer. And she worked for some chip developer. And, that's why I came to the U.S. I followed her. And so we sold the company, and I was basically sitting home and my wife going to work every day, and I was kind of unemployed and I didn't want to know what to do with myself, and I didn't feel like going back to being an attorney, and I don't know. So almost, I think, as a kind of a joke, one evening I told my wife that I'm going to start a bank, because my job before the company that we sold, my job was to manage the relationship between us and the acquiring banks that we work with. And at the time, again, this is starting early 2000s into the mid 2000s, e-commerce started rolling back. And what I saw is that how the legacy banks are very good at physical point of sale processing of cards and other services, so very local. But when it came to online, to the internet, and especially international, they were less, swimming well in the waters, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I had a very basic idea of starting some online processing company to do just that, online transactions that especially are cross-border, meaning one merchant sits in one country and the buyer sits in another country. Those transactions are a little bit more complicated. So, I told my wife, I'm going to start this kind of company and maybe I'm going to start a bank. Again, I was bored and I started doing it. And the more I worked on it, the more I fell in love with it, and the more Kool-Aid I drank, because once you are, right, it's like it's human nature, right? You start getting absorbed more and more and believing more and more. And this was the start of my second company, which again was in 2007. It's called Credorax. Credorax is a global acquiring bank and processor. I was the CEO until 2016. We then brought a professional, quote-unquote, CEO to run the business. It became very large and very operational. I'm the chairman of the board of Credorax. I'm still a large shareholder. And Credorax today has bank licenses in, 28 countries, maybe 29. Wow. I never remember exactly. Something along these lines. We process for thousands of merchants, billions of dollars a year. Company is profitable. And so I've been, engaged in fintech, if you will, for a lengthy period of time now, well over 15 years, maybe closer to 20 years. And, and that's my thing. So in 2016, I stepped back, as I said, from the day to day. I took a year off. I did some consulting with local. I live in Massachusetts now. So I did some consulting work here in New England for a few banks and a couple of universities. And in 2017, towards the end of, I started Jaspi. So, that's all the way up to Jaspi.
And we're going to talk about Jaspi. But before we talk about Jaspi, my first question is, what did your wife say when you said, oh, yeah, I'm gonna start a bank?
So she's used to me and my
and your ways
and my wild statements, and I have to say, so it's You know, I'm super fortunate, and that in two ways. Well, a lot more than two ways, but you know, with this regard is one that I think for at the beginning of my career, I never had the worry or the burden of being a sole provider. So I can always do my adventures and know that even if they go wrong, you know, at the beginning it was just my wife and I, and then we had, you know, our first kid and then the second, but I always knew that there would be, you know, food in the house. So it's very stressful to start a business or a company, but the fact that I wasn't the only, you know, breadwinner, it goes a long, long way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you even more than that. We were both, so when I started CredoRox, I did it, I was so naive and so stupid. And I always tell people, had I known then what I know now about banking and about fintech, I would never have done it. Never. Not in a million years. Huh. And you're not knowing, ignorance sometimes is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know what you don't know. And then you start without realizing how difficult it is, and you just roll with it. So sometimes I think back on what I did in 2007 until, let's say, 2010. And it's amazing to me. And you know something else? When people that were smarter than me told me how difficult that whole journey is going to be and how difficult it is to get bank licenses and all of those things, I didn't believe them. I thought that they're just like, you know, they're old. They don't know what they're talking about. They're stupid. I know better than them.
Right.
It wasn't, it's obviously wasn't true. But again, youth and ignorance, they have their virtues. Only my wife was on board with it, but think about it. We sold the company before. We had a little bit of money. And instead of yelling at me that we need to put all this money into buying a house, she was completely okay with me putting all of this into this crazy startup of starting a bank. And, you know, so she's like crazy like that together with me.
Well, and wonderful to have such a supportive partner, and also, you know, just highlighting the fortune of not having to worry about your family's going to be homeless if this thing doesn't work, right? So, like that safety net, that's really helpful, to say the least. And the other thing, because I know in our audience, our listeners, there's a lot of children who are future budding entrepreneurs, and so as you are a serial entrepreneur, you know, that mentality of, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. It can't be that hard. I have to say, from my experience of entrepreneurship and also many that I've known, it's not uncommon for the entrepreneur to be, I'll show them. It can't be as hard as they're saying. Like, isn't that a key, you know, even in hindsight, if it looks a little dumb, isn't that a key attribute, though, of those that push the limits to create and innovate?
100%. So, you know, again, I think about this today. And I'm lucky because it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sit and laugh and say about myself that I was stupid. It's true. But it was always like that. So I can tell you that I think one of the reasons, one of the motivators that pushed me into going into business after I was an attorney for a few years, if I'm honest with myself, I would never have admitted at the time. But I think today, again, when I look back, even that before I started CredoRox, was as a young attorney, I was looking at some of the clients that I represented, and I was thinking to myself, well, I can do that better. Oh, well, if he can do that, I can probably build something much, much bigger, you know? So this belief that everybody else doesn't know what they're talking about, even if they're experts and you know better than them and you're going to show them. And the more they tell you, that the more you say, no, it's not like that. I'll demonstrate how it should be done. So there is there's a big part of it of like a show off or like this unreasonable belief in yourself. And but then you need a little bit of luck or a lot of luck and a little bit of, you know, actually go and do things and not give up in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Because at a certain point, it hits you that they were right and it is really hard.
Right.
And all of those things that you thought they're going to just walk, they don't. And the trick then is not to give up.
Yes. And when we think of parenting and we think of our kids who are idea generators, you know, and especially when the kids are young and they don't see limits. And then, of course, as they grow up and we as parents inadvertently and society kind of shows limits to our kids. So I'm thinking of a story here that's leading to a question for you. And having one child in particular of mine is highly creative, very entrepreneurial. And he had so many ideas growing up and ideas for his businesses and how he was going to make his lemonade stand business more efficient and build this machine and the squeezer. And all of these ideas would come up against eventually reality of what it would take to prototype a juicing machine. And actually that juicing machine does exist pretty much for $10,000 in the restaurant business. And I remember trying to lead him as much as go with it, go with it, go with it, go with it, until we would hit some reality point. And then it would be crushing when I delivered certain information or pulled something up on the internet. And I always questioned, like, gosh, did I do the right thing there? Could I have kept this thing going longer? You know, like with this entrepreneurial and creative spirit. And I'm just wondering, as a father yourself and as someone who is like this, how do you support this entrepreneurial and creative spirit while also managing the reality and limitations of certain, you know, ideas?
That's a wonderful question. So I'll tell you something. I have two boys, and one of the things that we always talk about, I always tell them, and I really believe it, is that the secret to being an entrepreneur is not the ideal. Everybody has ideas, and there are probably tens of thousands of good ideas. What do you mean? Millions of good ideas every day by millions of people. And that's not the problem. The problem is not the idea. The problem is, how do you go and then you start implementing and you start working on it on the daily routine? And at the beginning, it needs to be, because at the beginning, you can't devote yourself full time for that, either because you have another job or if you're a kid, because you go to school and you have homework and you have other things to do. So you need to find room for it. And then you need consistency and you need perseverance and you need just to grind through it. And this is when 99% of those ideas fall. It's not about being good or bad, or not even about competition. It's about doing the never-ending slow process, especially at the beginning. So I always encourage them to go and actually do the work, right? And I don't care so much, by the way, if there is something like that or not. Or so, for example, a year ago, something like that, I think, you know, before Corona. So I think Corona warped our time, at least for me, perception. So now it's difficult for me to remember if it was a year ago or 2 years ago. This year seems very long.
For sure.
So the my sons were relatively close in age, so they do a lot of things together and, you know, play together and all of those things. They came up with an idea for a video game. It was actually very cool. And I told them, okay, so now do the work. Start writing down the rules. Find a friend that can, you know, is a good illustrator and have him draw a few pictures of what the characters would, you know. Do the work. And it doesn't really matter if there are games like that or not, because so what? So do it better. So do it cheaper. So do it faster. When I started CredoRocks to do an online processing, there are hundreds of banks in the world that do online processing. So what? My platform was better. So I'm not saying what I told them, and they're still working on it, is just do the work. And the work is what usually is where people drop off. And then hit the first obstacle. And I think, again, the trick is you continue. So, you know, you go raise money. The vast majority of the times that you're going to go talk to investors, you're going to hear no, like almost always.
Yep.
Right? So, again, at least for me, what I always tell people is that it's a funnel, right? So you go to 100 meetings. in 70 of them, it's a no immediately. Like some of them would tell you, well, they're being polite. They won't say it like that. But, you know, they'll tell you politely that that's a stupid idea and that's not for them. And here's the door. Can you leave? And there is something in it. So, you know, again, when I was walking out of those meetings, I would shrug and say, those old idiots, they're stupid. They don't even understand what I told them. I know so much better. It wasn't true, but it doesn't matter. All it matters is that you believe it. And then you go to the other 30. Out of those 30, they listen to you. Half of them will still say no, even if they think it's a good idea, because it's not a good fit for them. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this, so I won't drag it on, you're left with one, but one is all you need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's the doing it again and again and again and not giving up even when it's hard. That's the difficult part.
Mm-hmm. And then that's the message, right? That's the message to our kids is the tenacity,
perseverance,
right?
Yes.
The perseverance. And the other thing you said, which is another, you know, an entrepreneurial mandate is to totally believe in oneself and one's idea and product, right? Like that, whether everyone else thinks it's ridiculous, whether we can, you know, go to the moon or build underground tunnels, like if that person believes it and has a plan and sticks with it, you're going to get somewhere.
Yes. And I tell you what would happen to me, because it's not, again, it's easy to talk about it when it's now in the history. It's more difficult to go through the day to day. And everybody goes through, you know, difficult moments and crisis and all of those things. But I can tell you, I thought about it, you know, a while back in another connotation, but I remember myself, there were a few times where, you know, it seems like money is going to run out, or I got a big setback with one of the regulators in the beginning of our quest for the first bank license. And I remember myself going home, very depressed, you know, spending an evening with my head down, looking at the floor. But then I would wake up in the morning and it was like a phoenix. You know, I said to myself, I remember having conversations with myself in my head, which I do all the time, and saying, you know, oh, forget about it. This guy is just stupid. Doesn't matter. Here's how it's going to work. And I went and did all of this again.
Get up, do it again.
Yes.
Yes. And that's on a sidebar. The power of rest and a good night's sleep is essential.
Yes.
To any
yes.
Innovation and creativity.
Evening is always when it looks, evening and night is when it looks the walls.
Right, right.
So never make decisions at night, never. Only in the morning after. After you ate.
Yes. So let's transition to Jazby and family. And as your world started to transition to family, you know, tell us about this, where Jazby came from, and of course, what it has become.
So Jazby came from a combination of my own experience, you know, raising two boys, and you know, my kids were born into me starting CredoWalk. So my first son was born in the end of 2008. So it's about 6 months or so, or, I don't know, a year after I started CredoWalk. And so they grew up with me kind of running a small bank. And then, you know, they started going into school. And that whole experience has showed me a few things. So one, you know, is running a bank, and especially a bank that's very specialized around credit cards and debit cards, because we don't do regular banking. You can't walk into, there's no CredoWalk branch. You can't open an account. We don't deal with individuals at all. It's only corporations. It's only credit card processing or payments processing in general, FX, those kinds of very specialty things. So, you know, when we were moving to Massachusetts and got to know, you know, our new neighbors and your community and school and all of this, and people always ask you, you know, what do you do? And it's complicated to explain, especially because people don't want to, you know, hear all the, those boring regulatory details. So I started saying some things like, you know, hey, I work for a company that processes credit cards. And it's fascinating how people are so curious about credit cards, and everybody always have a question about it, or they want to tell you a story about it. So through this, I got, I think, some very interesting insight to what people at large think about money, about banks, about cards. about how they perceive all of those things, what they understand about them. And as my kids started, so that's maybe more on a philosophical level, but as my kids started going to the school system, I noticed a few things. So one, you know, they reach an age when they ask for allowance, and I was trying to, so I did a deal with them, I think when my first one was at first grade, that I'm going to give them, I think it was $3 a week every Sunday. And what would happen is that at the time I would travel a lot, so half the time, I don't know, I wasn't there, or I would just forget, even if I was home, I was tired and jet-lagged. And half the times that I did remember, I didn't have $3, and especially not $3 twice, you know? Right. So it became a nuisance, like, I don't know, like, where do I get $3 now? And then I also noticed that, so it was really difficult, and it was difficult for them to use it, because once in a while, I would just pay them up for all the weeks that I forgot. But then when they needed to use the money, how would they actually use it? Most of what they want is some video game on the iPad. So it didn't work. And I started thinking to myself that I'm supposed to be this expert and relatively well off, and I have credit cards and bank accounts and all of this, and it's so difficult, then it must be difficult for everyone. And then as they grew older, I noticed that, you know, school, nobody talks about money in school at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I started doing some research, and I found out that in 41, I'm speaking from memory, so I hope I get the numbers right, but somewhere around that, 41 out of our 50 states have absolutely no program about money or financial literacy at school, not at all. Uh-huh. And the 9 that do, it's super limited, so it's almost like they don't. And it's interesting. So we don't talk to our kids about money at home. The vast majority of households just don't. And we never talk to them about this at school. So we're raising, and this is not a new phenomenon. This is going on for 15, maybe 20 years. So we're raising generation after generation of kids who graduate, who go into college, and can't calculate APR, don't know what cumulative interest is, don't understand why it's not a good idea, you know, only to pay your minimum payments on your credit card. And it's not their fault. We've never talked to them about it. And right. I've read somewhere, which I thought was funny, so it's not my idea, I'm just repeating it, that somebody said that in Victorian times, sex was a taboo, and nobody talked about it ever at all. In our times, money is a taboo. We talk about sex all the time, everywhere, including in school, but we never talk about money. Huh. So it's like it switched, you know? So money is something that you apparently don't talk about, and it's so essential to everything that we do. Mm-hmm. So all of those things, so the part of it is the philosophy, and part of it is me not being able to give my kids allowance, and the kids not being able to actually use the allowance, well, once I remember to give it to them, brought me to Jaspi. And what we do at Jaspi is that we, you know, in a sentence, Jaspi is the way for families to move money. We connect kids and teens. So kids is anywhere, I don't know, seven, eight, third grade to 18, 25, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So up until teenagers and also young adults. So it's, we connect kids and teens, parents, and also, we also started grandparents. And the idea is that the adults, parents and grandparents, they give money to the kids. They give money in a digital form. So, you know, our kids today live, their life is digital, right? It's the tablet, it's the phone completely. Mm-hmm. And so the money goes immediate. It's easy. You never forget. If you forget, you can set up automatic allowance. You can do chores. You can reward for academic results. You know, you do what works for your family. It doesn't matter. Some people, I know some of our users, when I talk to them, tell me that in their family, it's a weekly or monthly allowance, and then chores and everything else is expected because you live here. Some do the opposite. They don't do allowance, but they do chores and other things. Some do some sort of, what I do, by the way, some sort of middle ground. I give them allowance, and then normal chores like feeding the dogs are expected. But if it's something very unusual, like, I don't know, a spring garage cleanup, then I'll give them some more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like an extra regular chore. Mm-hmm. And then the kids can do three things with the money. They can save. They can do good. We work with a list of nationwide charities. And the third thing they can do is spend. And the spend they can spend in our Jaspi shop, which is in-app. And they can also sign up for the Jaspi debit card or virtual debit card. And then they can spend online or anywhere that, that Apple Pay is accepted. And throughout all of those things, they also learn financial literacy without even understanding that they're learning it. They learn through experiences. They learn through doing.
So you basically brought your online banking experience to the family with interfacing with everything one needs to interface with.
Without ever calling it a bank and without ever talking about financial literacy, but it's super embedded within.
And so because this is so much more, I'm going to say some, you know, some apps that many people know of, like Venmo, you know, where people are transitioning money. And so this is beyond Venmo because there's so much more built into your platform.
Yes. Venmo is very peer-to-peer, right? So Venmo is me giving money to you. And I know I'm they're a super company. I don't mean to disrespect in any way. That's not what I mean. And I know they can also let you pay. But the essence of what they do is peer-to-peer. We also do peer-to-peer, but it's meant again, within the family unit, so it's very familial, and it's meant for the, most of the usage is for the kids and teens, and it can be used, again, to save money and to teach about savings. It's meant for them to do good. It's meant for them to manage a small budget and plan a small budget, and it's meant for them to understand early how money works, but it also is meant to just make it easy for the family. You know, again, as a parent, I know how frustrating it can be. I just forget about all the philosophy and all the high words. I just want to give him $5, man. And the kid wants the $5, and he wants to just be able to buy something, you know, for $3 on the app store. So sometimes it's just like the small things.
And just an example, the other day, one of my kids was needing some money for gas and was out needing money for gas. And I was, my app wasn't working or wasn't set up. And my wife was in a meeting, and it was like all the, it went, this whole thing happened when it, we, as a result, you know, it could have gone much simpler. And of course, now I know about Jaspi, right? Like there's simple ways to live now. Technology. I mean, what I like about what you're saying is there is the practical aspects of the app in everyday living, and then there's also the philosophy behind it. And speaking of philosophy, so you know, raising financially smart kids, I think you've started to tell us the ingredients which you believe is necessary to raise financially smart kids.
So I think. So it's a few things. One, just have the conversation. So more and more I learn, again, we don't talk about it. Not in school. Forget about school. In our family, it's something that we control. And still, vast majority of households, there is no to very limited conversations about money. And I always, I don't know exactly why I have some assumptions and I have some things that people tell me. And oftentimes it goes like into two reasons. One is that people feel, so they feel two things. One, they feel they don't know enough and they don't have the confidence that they can explain what interest is or what APR is and how exactly it works. And the second point is that they feel that they don't necessarily live up to the expectations. So if I don't save enough or at all for my salary, who am I to tell my kids to save? Because I don't do it, right? And so it's, I think it's a mostly, it's kind of a combination of one of those things and maybe other. Maybe they just have time. Maybe it's general embarrassment. And people are afraid of money. People are afraid of banks. I read, there was a poll, it's not new, it's from a few years ago where they interviewed millennials, and I don't know, 70% or some ridiculous percentage like that said that they would prefer to go to the dentist or have a dentist appointment than go to the bank.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have this intimidation factor mm-hmm. when it comes to money and banks. So maybe that's a part of it. So if you use JASB, it gives you a way into this conversation, and it doesn't have to be sophisticated, and you're not expected to be some college professor of economics, or you're not supposed to be Warren Buffett. It doesn't matter. And the vast majority of cases, you know more than your 10-year-old about money. And all they need is the basics. Okay.
Right.
Then if I want to tell you the number one important thing or two or three important things, saving, teach about savings. If you want to be financially successful or more than average successful or whatever you want to call it, savings is such a fundamental aspect of all of this. Second is planning, budgeting. Doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't you don't have to follow it. It's okay to make mistakes. And even if you, at the end of the day, exceed your budget or make mistakes with the budget, the fact that you budgeted and you thought about this, right? So, you know, CredoWalks now is a much bigger company, but through the history and now with JASB, which is still a startup, startups exceed or break their budgets all the time. It's a normal occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
But so imagine if I would go to my board and say, you know, last year we exceeded the budget, so I'm not going to plan a budget next year. It's ridiculous, right? Nobody's ever going to say it, right? It's stupid. Right. Of course you're going to budget. And then if there are mistakes or if in a certain quarter you need to do more, then okay. But at least you know what the baseline was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel, so this is so essential. It's okay if your kid, obviously your kid is not a publicly traded company. It's okay if he exceeds the budget, makes mistakes, loses, whatever. But if he goes through some very basic process, thinking about budgeting, it helps a lot. And again, it makes them be more successful as they grow. And there's tons of data that proves this, by the way. It's not just me talking. There's tons of data that shows this. And the third thing I would say, one more thing, I know I'm long-winded.
Go ahead.
Is give back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, at least for me, you know, I come from very humble beginnings. My father passed away when I was young, when I was a kid, and my mom was a homemaker that never worked. And I grew up not far from poor, if not poor. And I, you know, when my kids were born and we're so lucky to be able to give them so much more, but one of the things that I was worried about is they don't grow up to be, you know, to become assholes.
Right.
So give back is so important. So it's saving, give back, budgeting.
Mm-hmm. There's the formula. Saving, yes. Give back, and budgeting. And if there is a fourth, I think the other thing you said is teaching the basics.
Yes.
Right. And it's for a lot of parents who don't, you know, who aren't in the financial industry, in the banking industry, it could feel overwhelming. How am I going to explain this to my kids? And on the one hand, it's important because this show is all about awareness, is first of all, to think back, folks, about what you learned or did not learn about money when you were young, and what you would have liked to have learned, and how you maybe stumbled upon it in more difficult lessons than maybe could have been avoided. But it really is, as you're talking about, Benny, it's the basics, like compounding interest, APR, saving. I mean, it's not, we don't have to make it rocket science for it to be really impactful.
You know, there is a story I've told before, which I really love. It doesn't even have to be that, you know. My son last year, I think, really wanted the Apple AirPods. And those are like expensive things, even if they're not, I think he bought not the newest one, but it's still like, I don't know, $150, something like that, I think. And he was saving for a long time. He really wanted it, and he wanted to buy it himself. So after, I don't know how long, he was saving, and we helped him with the last $20, $30. And the day came when he had enough. So he wanted to go and buy it. By the way, until today, this is his most cherished possession because he bought it himself. It wasn't mm-hmm. a gift. Wasn't something he worked for it. So, but that's not the story. The story is that, you know, when you buy electronics, oftentimes you get this pop-up if you want to pay additional amount, I don't know how much, then they give you like a accident insurance if you break them, if you lose them, if this, whatever. So he never heard of this, and he had enough money just to buy the things. And then when the message came, do you want to pay another $20 to I don't remember what they call it, but it's like an insurance, right? They don't call it insurance. Yeah. Right. Right. So he didn't know what to do. So he came to me and said, Dad, look, so we spent 3 minutes talking about, you know, where are you going to use this, at home, or are you going to take it out to school, or are you going to use it when you go to visit your friends? What's going to happen if you lose it? How devastated would you be, or would you be okay with it if you need to pay a little bit more to get one of them back, or something like that? Really, a couple of minutes, maybe. And then I also told him, you know, man, it's like what you're buying here really is insurance. And you know, when we drive our car, we insure the car, right? And here's why, because what happens if the car gets stolen? Then we don't want to need to buy a new one. The risk is too big. We insure our house, right? For exactly the same reason. So with those 3 minutes and this one example about the car, he now understands insurance. At least basic. Again, he's 12. It needs to be a PhD. But if you ask him today, he still remembers it. You know why he remembers? Because it wasn't a boring lecture of me telling him, okay, son, today we're going to talk about insurance. It was something that he really wanted, that he really needed, a decision that he needed to make relevant to his life. Now he knows what insurance is.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great example of taking something in the moment and teaching a larger concept. And we know with our kids tend to pay more attention when something is relevant to them and is meaningful than when we just sit and talk about some concept that's out there that we need them to know when they're older and they hear like wah 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 wah. So thank you for that story, because it is it just shows how there's so many teachable moments that our kids bring to us, and how we need to be mindful in those moments and purposeful about the lesson and the communication that we want to deliver. Okay, Benny. Parent footprint moment time. Tell us about a time when you became aware of yourself as a person or as a parent, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your child.
So, you know, you said this to me, that you're going to ask this question. And now for 40 minutes and 41 seconds, I've been thinking about it, because it's a difficult question. You know, I think, so I have two things and I need to choose between them. I think when I was, especially at Cradle Rock, especially at the beginning, I used to travel like a crazy person. And at the time, we lived again in California. We lived in Santa Clara. And a lot of the business or the licenses and the visa membership, we had to do with visa headquarters in London. So I was traveling a lot. And San Francisco, London is like a 10-hour flight, and so maybe more, and 10-hour time difference. So it's difficult. You know, your like time zones are completely the opposite. And so I would go on the road on Monday morning and come back on Thursday evening or Friday or things like that. And when my kids were very, very young, so, you know, I think especially for fathers, and, you know, I hope your audience don't get mad at me. I think it takes a little bit longer to get really attached when the kids, when they're babies, when the newborns. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and I don't remember exactly the year, and I don't remember exactly how old he was, but with my first one, there was a point where he was not, I think he was not yet standing, so he was still a very, very young baby. But I came back home again one evening, probably on Thursday or Friday, after being away for a week, and When I got to his room, he was beyond himself to see me. And he reached out, he wanted me to hold him, and I think for an hour or something like that, like he didn't let go. Mm. And it wasn't, I can't tell you that before it wasn't like that. It's not like I didn't love him before. Of course I did, but maybe not the same way. I don't know if I'm making sense to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So something like that, like the understanding all of a sudden that the baby is, it's not just a baby, it's not just your responsibility, but there's like a real person there that misses you, or when you're away, there is a toll that he pays, even if he can't explain it or even know it because he was so young.
Yeah. And I imagine that made it harder to leave the next time.
Yes. So when you travel a lot, and now thankfully Jazzby is very, very US based. It's a lot less international. So I have to travel. Well, this year I haven't almost traveled at all since February. Now I miss it. I never believed that I will miss it, but now I do. I want to go back. But yes, but when you travel a lot, and in the Credorox days, I used to travel almost on a weekly basis. It's very difficult. And then the day before you travel, you start getting depressed because you need to travel.
Yeah, I have you're triggering a similar experience. There was a time when I was traveling, not nearly as much as you, but more than I wanted to. And we were away at a family, at our family's house, a couple, 3 hours away. And I needed to leave early on a Sunday to go catch a flight when everyone else was staying, I believe, for another day or so. And my son, who was young at the time, I remember I went to kiss him and hug him goodbye, and he was playing with his cousin, and he looked up to me and he said, "Dad, where are you going?" And I told him where I was going, and I'll never forget this. He said, "You're leaving again?" And it just crushed me. And the whole drive, I had a like 3 hour drive to the airport and then the flight, and the whole time it just made me think about, you know, being mindful about these decisions and these travel, because I guess we matter more than sometimes we think.
Yes. Yes. Especially again, when you have kids, and so when they're super young with their babies, maybe they don't care. And then at a certain point they care a lot. And then I think we're probably, my kids are now starting to be where it's like, okay, see you, man. See you when you get back, Dad.
Right. It changes. It totally changes. Not the feeling, not the connection, but the face to face.
Of course.
Benny, tell everyone where they can get Jazzby, anything they need to know about downloading, signing up.
Okay, so you can go to jazzby.com. It's jazzby.com. Sign up for the debit card. And download the app and use it. So two things maybe I'll tell you. One, the service is completely free. We don't charge you anything to use the app, to use the debit card, to sign up for the debit card. So go and give it a try. The second thing I will tell you is that our service, because it's a financial service and it's regulated, and we work in partnership with MasterCard and with a couple of banks, then when you sign up, you don't sign up for a video game. It takes a few minutes. We need to verify your identity. We need to make sure that all the, that all the regulatory restrictions and regulations, that we abide by them. So we've developed this really cool bot that guides you through the process. Depends on how many family members you sign up. So 1, 2, 3 kids, your wife, grandparents, right? So it can take from 2 minutes to sign one parent and one kid to 4 minutes to sign, 3, 4, 5 family members. But it's really painless. So go ahead and give it a try. The debit cards are brand new, by the way. So you can go right now. They're live. I'm super excited. I use mine all the time. So by the way, when you sign up, you can get your kids' debit cards, but you can also get yourself. And I got one myself. I put it on my Apple Wallet or Apple Pay. I use it all the time now. That's like my default. It's really cool.
That's really cool. And congratulations. You talk about it with ease, but we know that the starting the startup and from start to now is a big deal. So congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. That is our show, Family Finance, with our esteemed guest, Benny Natchman. And Benny, thank you for just being just genuine, authentic, and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Everybody, you know what to do. Check us out, www.parentfootprint.com. Subscribe to the show. Tell others about it. Join us in the mission of making the world a more loving and compassionate place, one parent and one child at a time. Be the person you want your child to become. Be kind to yourself. And as always, ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave?